I hope you're feeling better.
Yes, thank you very much. That's the only time I have ever had to reschedule an argument. You know, it makes us realize how lucky we are to be healthy. So thank you for coming back. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes, please. And may it please the court, Lila Silverstein on behalf of Edmund Maynor. Mr. Maynor asked this court to reverse his conviction on count two because the convictions for counts one and two violate double jeopardy. On a related note, the convictions for counts one, two, and four constitute the same criminal conduct, and Mr. Maynor was deprived of his right to the effective assistance of counsel when his attorney failed to present the issue. And finally, the convictions for counts three and four should be reversed and the case remanded for a new trial because of prosecutorial misconduct. And I'd like to at least discuss the double jeopardy issue today. Mr. Maynor was convicted of both first-degree robbery and second-degree assault for threatening a jeweler with a gun in order to steal a tray of rings.
If the charge of first-degree robbery is based solely upon the being armed with the firearm option, which is how the jury was instructed here,
yes,
can you convict without the victim ever having seen the firearm?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because it's based on being armed with a firearm. So in that instance, it would be exactly like what happened in Kier.
If you rob a blind person and you're there and you're ranting and raving, and so there's evidence that would have caused a fear or apprehension of physical force, but the person actually didn't see or hear anything about a firearm, he still would have been armed?
He still would have been armed with a firearm. That's certainly true. But I guess that's not what happened in this case. And when you look at double jeopardy, it's as charged and proved is how we have to review it. I mean, that's what the court said in Freeman and numerous double jeopardy issues, is that we analyze the issue based on how the crime was charged and proved in the particular case.
What does that mean in the merger context, when as required to be proved or as permitted to be proved?
As actually charged and proved based on the evidence and instructions in the particular case. And really what I would ask the court to consider is that Kier, State versus Kier, resolves every issue in this case. Every argument that the state makes in response on the double jeopardy issue is an argument that they presented to the Supreme Court in State versus Kier, and the Supreme Court rejected all of those arguments, including the argument that somehow there's no double jeopardy problem if the elevating factor is a deadly weapon instead of substantial bodily harm. In Kier, the same was true.
Is Kier the case that you kind of stand or fall on, do you think?
It is, and we stand on
Kier,
it.
The court said that the verdict was ambiguous because it wasn't clear about who the victim was in each charge, I think the court directly said that if the state wanted to win on that, they needed to provide in the instruction, they needed to make it clear in the instruction that one guy was the victim of the assault and the other guy was the victim of the robbery, because otherwise, same guy might have been the victim of both the assault and the robbery.
Correct. And in that case, I guess on that point, what the state was arguing in Kier was, look, we avoided any double jeopardy problem by making an election in closing argument. We elected a particular victim as to the assault charge and the other victim as to the robbery charge, even though the robbery charge had named both victims. And the Supreme Court said it doesn't matter because the evidence and the instructions permitted the jury to convict Kier of both robbery and assault based on the same use of a gun against the same victim. And the same is true in Mr. Maynor's case. And in fact, Mr. Maynor's case is even worse because the state did not actually successfully elect in closing argument.
So, I mean, the question fundamentally here with double jeopardy, I guess we don't have a case where they're the same at law. Your argument here is that it's the same in fact. Or no, we're not even arguing that because you're on the merger.
It's merger, yes, and merger
do you think here is confined to the merger context?
I think Keir resolved the double jeopardy issue based on a merger analysis, which was the same in Freeman, of course. And so it wasn't resolved, say, under a Blockberger analysis of the elements.
Right.
It was based on merger, and that's our argument
still,
as well.
I mean, here I have to say, has always struck me as I don't know exactly where it comes from. You know, I mean, in other words, the idea that the rule of lenity and the possibility that the jury might have used one piece of evidence, they might have used both. acts, or that it might have just been one act. I mean, I just don't know where fear comes from, really, this rule of lenity business. Are there other cases in the world besides Keir that do this? Talk about the rule of lenity, even though there's more than one act the jury could have used to elevate the robbery.
Right. I don't know.
And that's basically the state's position. You know, the state said, look, the first act of pointing and threatening was what we used at being armed with a deadly weapon. That elevated that made the robbery. Okay, then he turned around just a few seconds later and shot,
mm-hmm.
and that's the assault.
Right.
Okay, I don't understand, other than Keir says so, why that is punishing somebody twice for the same offense. There's two different offenses.
Well, we don't. We would disagree with that characterization of it. First of all, the state didn't clearly elect because they referenced that shot when discussing the robbery count as well.
Okay, but before you go on to that, I'm just really asking you this question: where does Keir come from? Does it tie to a United States Supreme Court case on double jeopardy? Is it drawn from some nucleus of cases in the state of Washington?
Well, it reaffirms Freeman. And particularly the consolidated case of Zumwalt within Freeman. So it's consistent with Zumwalt. The only difference, I think, with Zumwalt was that it was based on substantial bodily harm instead of being armed with a deadly weapon, but otherwise it was pretty similar. And the point is that you've got sort of this ongoing course of conduct that's all happening in a pretty short time period where a person is threatening somebody else.
So,
with
I mean,
a gun.
I guess to be clear, your answer is no, there isn't any other case like here. So it's its own.
I don't know because, Keir so clearly controls that I didn't. I mean, it does. It addresses every single argument in their response brief. And so I didn't look beyond Keir other than I, of course, also cited Freeman and Francis. But I didn't look to see whether there's a U.S. Supreme Court case directly on point because Keir is on point and resolves every issue in this case. And I'll keep talking a little more and reserve less time for rebuttal. The other argument that the state makes that was resolved in Keir is that Esparza controls. But Keir said, no, Esparza is different because it was an attempted robbery. And so an attempt is obviously very different from a completed crime. They said any act could form the requisite substantial step. And it doesn't have to necessarily be the assault, but that's different for a completed robbery. And in this case, we have a completed robbery, just like in Keir. So I do think that Keir controls, because in Keir, the robbery was elevated by a deadly weapon, just as in Mr. Maynard's case. In Keir, it was a completed robbery, unlike Esparza, but just like Mr. Maynard's case. And in Keir, even where the prosecutor did successfully make an election and closing argument, it didn't matter.
If you, how do you think the state should have, what should they have done if they wanted to avoid the result that you're arguing for?
It was a first-degree robbery. I don't think they needed to charge another crime for what happened in the jewelry store.
You were the prosecutor, but I mean, the point is there were two different acts of assault, so the state wanted to punish him for the two different acts of assault. Let's assume they're entitled to do so if they do it right under Keir. I gather from Keir that they somehow should have, under your argument,
proposed a jury instruction.
In the instruction somehow to particularly tie the two acts of assault, somehow described them in the instruction, and then say this act of assault has to go to this and this act of assault has to go to that. Just like they did in the election argument, but in writing.
Either that or at a minimum done something like they did in distinguishing counts 2 and 4, which was to say an act distinct from count 4. So at a minimum, it would have to be that, and they didn't do that. So we asked the court to...
They did charge assault 1 and robbery 1, which under Freeman doesn't merge.
That is correct.
So the reason we have here is because the jury had a lesser included on count 2.
Correct.
How does that fit into the analysis? Because I don't think either Keir or Freeman discussed that issue.
That's true. That's correct. But I think the point is that the jury convicted Mr. Maynor of second-degree assault, and that he was convicted of a second-degree assault based on assault with a deadly weapon and first-degree robbery based on scaring somebody with a deadly weapon. So the offenses merge under Keir, and that resolves the double jeopardy issue.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Display versus shooting, is there a way to distinguish that? Because to get assault 1, you just have to display. You have to be armed, but you have to display it. Whereas assault 2, the way it's instructed here in the jury, it seems like there had to be harm. Is that a
that there way, had to be harm?
Harm, substantial bodily harm.
No, I don't think that's true. And forgive me, I do have the jury instructions, but they're over there. I think.
Well, instruction 19 says a person commits a crime of assault in the second degree when he or she intentionally assaults another and thereby recklessly inflicts substantial bodily harm or assaults another
right.
with a deadly weapon.
And
then
right.
the two convicted says with a deadly weapon.
Right.
So how does that affect the analysis, if at all?
So he was convicted of assault with a deadly weapon, not substantial bodily.
And it doesn't matter display versus actual shooting or pointing at that point?
I don't believe that it does,
okay.
No.
I've used up enough of your time. Thank you.
Sorry, thank you.
I'll give you 11 minutes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Jennifer Joseph. I'm King County Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, appearing for the State of Washington. And we're here to ask the court to affirm Mr. Maynor's convictions and sentences. I will also begin with the double jeopardy merger issue because I think that is the one that is of the most interest panel. So just to go through very, very briefly how we address this double jeopardy issue, we first get through the Blockberger test, and we know that that's not an issue here. We know that these offenses are not the same in law, and that resolution gets us to a strong but rebuttable presumption that the legislature intended to punish these crimes separately. That presumption can be overcome in some cases by the merger doctrine, but the merger doctrine only applies when the legislature has clearly said that in order to prove a particular degree of one crime, you have to also prove an act that's a separate criminal act. That's not what we have here, because what elevated his robbery to the first degree was being armed with a deadly weapon, and he would be guilty of that even if he kept the gun in his pocket the whole time.
Well, would that be the case? Because the information says, in the commission of an immediate flight therefrom, the defendant was armed with a deadly weapon, to wit, a handgun, and displayed a firearm.
And displayed it.
So he's got to show it.
Well, in this case, he did show it. But he also completed this robbery before he ever shot the weapon. He argued with the jeweler for the jewelry. He warned them, I'm going to shoot if you don't give it to me in 3 seconds. The jeweler let go. He turns. He starts running out the door. He turns around and shoots. He had completed that. He was getting away with it. He turned around and shot.
State gets the benefit under the transactional theory of robbery, gets the benefit of someone who waits until they're halfway out the door and then turns around and then makes a display of force. Are they stuck with the same concept when it comes to stepping back in and saying, and shooting the gun?
Well, I think that the transactional view of robbery comes out of a sufficiency of the evidence sort of dynamic, and that's not what we're dealing with here. But yes, the state doesn't need to prove a contemporaneous or a preceding act of force in order to prove a robbery. You can prove the robbery with a force in order to retain the property. And in this case, I understand that's what Mr. Maynor is arguing, was that all I wanted to do was get this tray of jewelry. But that goes to, and this sort of blends into the same criminal conduct argument that I also was hoping to hit on, but that's his subjective intent there. He wants to complete this or be killed trying. And I think that that's an important thing to keep in mind, because it could be that he turned around and shot at the jeweler, not because he wanted to retain this jewelry, which the jeweler said, I wasn't even chasing him at that point. I was just standing there like nothing. Maybe he did that. Maybe he was afraid he was going to get away with it. And that doesn't affect his goal of committing suicide by cop, which is what the state's sort of theory was of his motivation.
In your brief, your attempt to get away from Kier is basically the election and closing. But is there really a case that has applied an election in that context?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think when you look at Kier very closely, and it's important to do that and to look at how the jury was instructed in Kier, that makes a big difference, and I think it makes a big difference to the way that that case comes out. In Kier, the jury was specifically, a victim was named in one of the counts, and no victims were named in the other count. So the jury, even though the state tried to make this election in closing argument that no, this fellow was the victim of the carjacking and this fellow was the victim of the assault, the instructions were somewhat unclear about that, because the instructions said this fellow was the victim of this crime, and it didn't say anything about the other one. So I think that's what the court goes through when they say, yeah, well, nice try, state, but you didn't effectively elect. In this case, there's nothing like that. The state did effectively elect. The state didn't even need to argue the robbery one, because Mr. Maynard admitted the robbery in the first degree when he was on the stand. In the closing argument on that topic, the deputy prosecuting attorney just very briefly says, yeah, he went in there with a gun. He doesn't dispute that. He got the trays by threatening. That's how he got the tray of jewelry, was by the threat. The deputy prosecuting attorney then says, and he shot his gun in there, for heaven's sakes, or whatever. I don't think that undermines the election. He clearly said the act that proves the robbery is the threat. I will shoot you if you don't give me the jewelry.
So the state's view is, once we get to the merger analysis, it ends there. When I read Kier, it's almost like there's a series of tests that you go through, and then it seems like the final test, I lost count whether it was three or four, is different purposes or objectives. Is that where you think the subjective issue of suicide by cop comes in, or is... I'm trying to figure out what that really means, to be honest.
Right. Well, I think that you don't need to get to that fourth element of this analysis. I think if you come out of the merger doctrine analysis and find that, oh yeah, it looks like the legislature didn't really want to punish these separately, then there's an exception to that rule if you can show that there was an independent purpose. And I don't believe you need to get to that point, because then we don't even get to merger, because this isn't a case where you had to prove the assault in order to prove the robbery in the first degree.
To rule in that way, would we have to say that the robbery was complete before the assault in the second degree occurred?
Well, that is a good question. It has always been my understanding that the robbery was complete, and that is the state's position. And I'm not sure what the effect is if you disagree with that, how the rest of the analysis goes. I did want to point out that Esparza, there is nothing in Esparza, I think, that confines its rationale to the context of an attempt. What the reasoning was in Esparza that this court held to was, it is unnecessary under the facts of this case to prove that the defendant engaged in conduct amounting to assault in the second degree in order to elevate the robbery and to elevate the attempted robbery. There isn't anything different about this case just because it was a completed robbery. We still didn't need to prove the assault in order to prove the robbery.
But Kier, under its facts, kind of took on Esparza and said, well, that's a whole different thing. It is attempted. You didn't have to prove the assault to get a substantial step in the assault. And then at paragraph 17, it goes on and it's talking about, Kier was convicted of a completed first-degree robbery, which required more than a substantial step. That assault here involved assault with a deadly weapon rather than by infliction of substantial bodily harm does not defeat application of the merger doctrine. The fact remains the completed assault was necessary to elevate the completed robbery to first degree.
Right.
And that's before they get to the rule of lenity and the two victims.
Right.
So well, the court, they're saying if you charge them with being armed with a deadly weapon for first-degree assault, for first-degree robbery, and you've proven facts of an assault involving the same weapon, that's merger.
I don't read it to say that. And I think that there...
So your point, then, it really comes down to the instruction on robbery, which doesn't mention assault.
Right.
It just simply says that in the commission of these acts, the defendant was armed with a deadly weapon.
Right.
It could have talked about assault.
It could have. We could have charged robbery in the first degree based on the shot that he fired in the store. But we saw that as two separate...
argued you perhaps should have. I mean, in other words, then you would have only had three counts.
Right. Correct. But I think the state felt that these were separately punishable instances. They were separate crimes. He was going to get away with the jewelry, it appeared. He turned back. He made a choice to turn back and try to shoot somebody. That bullet actually went through the wall and almost hit somebody else. We could have charged another count, probably, based on that. I don't think that this... this case should be resolved on whether the prosecutor charged, too many crimes or not enough crimes. The analysis is very clear. Merger doctrine does not apply here.
Why not as counsel just suggested, and that is to add an instruction that says must be a different act, just like you did for count four, but why not say one and two have to be?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't have an answer for why that wasn't done in this case. I think it would be here if it had been done.
Different issue.
Well, there are other issues in the case, but I think it would add to clarity. The jury was instructed, of course, that they needed to decide each count based on its own facts and not to infer guilt on one from guilt on another. And with the prosecutor's closing argument clearly saying count two is based on the shot that he fired in the store. Robbery, count one, is based on the threat. They're two separate crimes. One was committed before the next.
Following up on that, it looks like all forms of assault were given to the jury, all definitions of assault. Does that affect the analysis on the merger at all?
Well, I thought about that quite a bit because I think in Keir you have, I think it's Keir, or maybe it was one of the others, what was elevating the robbery was the threat, or what the basis of the assault was the putting somebody in fear. And so I looked at that, and I looked very closely at the state's closing argument, and even though the jury was given all of the definitions of assault in the instruction, the only thing that was argued by the state and by defense, it was the one definition that would have to do with shooting the gun. And that aside, we ask you to affirm. Thank you.